This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Later on Building Bridges, United Mine Workers President Roberts says Massey CEO Blankenship should be jailed.
And now it's 29 miners that have died. Owners of the Upper Branch Mine were warned over 2 years ago about a pattern of violations which should have allowed far stricter federal oversight of the mine.
But while it continued to amass violations, the Mine Safety and Health Administration allowed Massey Energy Company to avoid meaningful discipline. And the question as 29 miners die is, what should have been done and what must be done to beef up the mine safety enforcement?
To help answer these questions, we're joined by Tony Oppegard, former General Counsel, Kentucky Department of Mine Safety, and Wes Addington with the Mine Safety Project of the Appalachian Citizens Law Center. So let's give some picture of what actually did occur and why it occurred. Tony, what went wrong?
There was a complete breakdown of safety at the mines, which is evidenced by the great number of citations and orders that were issued by MSHA to the Massey mine in the year preceding the accident. There's a provision of the Federal Mine Safety Law, Section 104D, called an unwarrantable failure. And that's a citation which the company had knowledge of, an unsafe condition that the company had knowledge of and failed to correct. So they're really the most egregious violations issued by MSHA, and the company had about 50 of those in 2009. That really indicates a lack of commitment to safety and certainly a mine that did not have a safety culture and had little regard for its workers.
Wes, this was only one mine owned by the Massey Company. Do you have any knowledge of what Massey does overall in West Virginia and other states?
You know, I've reviewed the Upper Big Branch mine citation and orders over the past few years. I can tell you that overall, Massey does not have a good reputation in the coal fields for safety.
And I know Massey is the fourth largest coal company in the United States and the largest coal producer in central Appalachia. And it's my understanding that there had been 45 deaths at the Massey coal operation prior to the 29 miners that recently died.
I'm not certain about that, but I can say that I know Wes and I are very concerned because Massey recently purchased Black Mountain Resources, which is a major producer in Harlan County, Kentucky. And they have about eight or so mines up the same hauler in Cumberland in Harlan County. So Massey is supposed to close on the deal sometime this quarter. And we had heard earlier that it would probably be in later in April that they would start operating those mines. And so we have a great deal of concern for Kentucky miners. I did happen to look at the citation history from one of their other mines in Pike County. That's the Freedom Energy number one mine. And they have a very troubling history there as well. Already this year, we're not a third of the way through the year, and they had amassed, I think it was 235 citations and orders in just that short period of time. So that's not a very enviable safety record either. So we are concerned for the miners who will be working in those Massey mines in Harlan County in the near future.
Wes, you handle a lot of complaints where miners are being suppressed for speaking out about these conditions. Can you talk about some of those things and what happens to them?
I can. One of the nice things about the Mine Act, you know, which was a law that came from another mining disaster, is that it protects miners who raise safety issues. A miner who is concerned about safety at his mine and complains about safety cannot or should not be discriminated against, retaliated against in any fashion, whether it be termination from his job or a cut in pay or move to a less desirable working location or job description. So we represent miners who have had situations to complain about safety and then have been discriminated against. You know, quite often what can happen is a miner is discharged, and it puts the miner in a real difficult position. Although the law fortunately allows for what's called temporary reinstatement, it's something that the Secretary of Labor is responsible for administrating and applying for, but a miner who has filed a discrimination complaint and has been discharged, if the government applies for that miner can be temporarily put back to work while his case is pending.
Out of all the many, many tearful statements, and I'm not being flippant about that, what I never heard in the New York area from a single person in the media was that there's any correlation between the deaths, between the violations, and the fact that this is a non-union mine. And certainly I wonder if in either of your minds there is a direct correlation between the fact that this is explicitly Don Blankenship's mine and it is non-union.
A union mine ordinarily is a much safer mine than a non-union mine, for the simple reason that miners have a voice for them. Union mines have safety committees. Those are elected officials who are involved in safety matters at the mine. So, for instance, what Wes was talking about, Section 105C of the Mine Act, the anti-discrimination provision, if a miner, for instance, is, let's say there's a piece of equipment broke down under unsupported roof, and it's illegal to go under unsupported roof, an area that's not been roof bolted or otherwise supported. Let's say a piece of equipment breaks down and a foreman instructs a miner to go under the unsupported roof and get that piece of equipment out. In a non-union mine, here's the choices he's faced with. He can either do it and risk his life, go under unsupported roof, which may fall, to try to get that piece of equipment, or he can refuse to do it, in which case he's probably going to be fired. If he's not fired, he probably will be discriminated against in some way by the operator in an attempt to try to get rid of him, to make him quit. Now, in a union mine, the miner can say, no, I'm not going to do that. And if the foreman insists on it, then he can say, well, okay, I need to call my safety committeeman. And that safety committeeman, whatever job he has in the mine, he can get off that piece of equipment or whatever he's doing, come to where the problem is and discuss it with the foreman. And if they don't resolve it right there, the miner always has the right to file a grievance and ultimately take it to arbitration without invoking the federal law. In the non-union mine, if he gets fired or discriminated against, he's got to invoke the federal law. Now, that being said, it doesn't mean that a UMWA mine is necessarily exempt from accidents happening. It all depends on the strength of the safety committee. So, for instance, in September 2001, we had, I believe it was 13 miners killed at the Jim Walter Resources Mine in Brookwood, Alabama, and that was a union mine. But I have a hard time believing at this Upper Big Branch mine that all of these unwarrantable failure violations would have occurred had it been a UMWA mine. I just don't think they would have stood for it. They would have intervened long before there was an explosion like occurred last week.
Wes, before we get into what went wrong with either the enforcement or whether the federal safety laws need to be reformed, whether it's enforcement or need new laws, the laws in Kentucky, the state laws, are much tougher than those in West Virginia. How are they different, and why do you suppose that is?
As a result of the Sago mine disaster and then the Darby mine disaster, which was also in 2006 in Harlan County, in which five miners died, Kentucky revamped their mine safety laws on two different occasions in 06 and in 07. And as part of that, both times they increased inspections. So currently in the state of Kentucky, there are six annual inspections of every coal mine. I think a lot of other states and frankly, the federal government could take notice of that. And, you know, since the Mine Act was enacted, the federal government has been on four annual inspections, and that has not increased, you know, in over 30 years. So, honestly, that's the first place that I would start in trumpeting, you know, Kentucky's laws versus other states or versus the federal government.
Well, I know that there were at least 500 violations last year at the Upper Branch mine, and purportedly more than 1,000 from 2005 forward at the Massey operation. What, again, went wrong with government in this instance? Because the coal production actually tripled during the time that these violations were amassing. What happened?
It's hard to put your finger on it in one way. I think there may have been some type of intimidation factor because it is a Massey mine. Massey's CEO, Don Blankenship, is very controversial, very combative, aggressive, quick to sue, for instance, and he's a powerful figure in West Virginia. And one wonders if maybe the regulators in that district weren't somewhat intimidated by him. And reportedly, the coal administrator was on his way to Kentucky to meet with either Mr. Blankenship or some other high-ranking official about problems at a Massey mine. And MSHA hasn't really explained whether that was this Upper Big Branch mine or a mine in Kentucky. And on his way to that meeting, he learned of the explosion and then went on to the mine. But I have a feeling that there was somewhat of an intimidation factor there because MSHA certainly had some tools in their enforcement toolbox that they could have used that they didn't use in this occasion.
Well, what can be done about situation? I mean, the question is enforcement versus changing the law. I mean, there were a lot of activity, a lot of law changes after the Sago disaster. And did that in any way make the law tougher with regard to the rise of these kinds of accidents? Do we need stricter enforcement or do we need new laws?
Well, I think we need both. Unfortunately, the Miner Act, which was passed after Sago and Aracoma and the Kentucky Derby accidents, really addressed post-accident measures that needed to be taken. For instance, it required the refuge chambers, which is a wonderful thing. They didn't help in this explosion. I guess the impact of the explosion was so devastating that miners didn't have an opportunity to travel to the refuge chambers. So it also mandated more self-contained self-rescuers, which are the breathing devices. So it had some good things in it, but the emphasis in the Miner Act was what can we do to help miners after there's been a fire or an explosion, two-way communication systems. But it didn't really address ways in which to prevent accidents in the first time. And that's what the Kentucky law did in 2007, was really some common sense provisions aimed at preventing accidents from occurring. And there actually are 13 provisions in that law that exceed the requirements of the federal law. And as Wes said, it'd probably be a good idea for MSHA to take a look at the Kentucky law and ask Congress to adopt some of those same changes that we had made in Kentucky.
I've understood that there are things that are called sniffers, methane monitors, where, for example, you can monitor the methane and the buildup of methane, and that what then happens is there's some sort of a really almost a kick and switch that can shut things down right before things reach an explosive level. Is that part of what we need, particularly again to force these owners to put in equipment that have more of a prophylactic effect to protect our miners?
Well, I think so. I mean, one thing that we've pushed for over time is that each miner be provided a gas detector, and that would allow an individual miner to protect himself. Often what we hear, and especially anecdotally from miners, is often they're away from a gas detector, checking for methane, and if they have a concern about it, it's some difficulty, and then can sometimes create consternation among management in requesting one. So that would be a place to start. That if we're looking at beefing up the mine safety law in the U.S., is whether or not each individual miner should be afforded a gas detector of their own.
I know that Mr. Blankenship has been fined before many times over safety violations. Is this enough, or fines enough? At what point should criminal penalties be imposed?
Well, I think we believe that certainly at some point closure orders should be used, probably more effectively than they were in this case. And MSHA did issue a bunch of closure orders, which means that areas of the mine or pieces of equipment themselves were shut down for periods of time. But that's only until whatever hazardous condition is found is corrected. And there is a provision of the law, federal mine safety law, that allows MSHA to go into federal court, United States District Court, and seek an injunction against an operator if MSHA determines that there's a pattern of violations that continues to expose miners to health and safety risks. And unfortunately, MSHA has never, in the 33 years that that law has been on the books, has never used that enforcement tool to seek an injunction against an outlaw coal operator. I think it clearly should have been used in this case. It was not. And, you know, therefore, I think MSHA, although the operator has the ultimate responsibility for safety of its mine, I think MSHA does bear some responsibility for this disaster because they really didn't act as aggressively as they should have in trying to clamp down on the operator. This was clearly a mine. I mean, I've never heard of a mine that has had 50 unwarrantable failures in a single year. It's really off the charts. You're in a crisis situation when that occurs. And why MSHA didn't ramp up its enforcement activity, I really don't know. But it did not, unfortunately. And that really should be part of the investigation. But again, unfortunately, MSHA investigates the accidents, and it's not really going to investigate its own role in the accident. It's going to investigate the role played by the mine operator, and that's fine as far as it goes. But MSHA's actions should also be looked at, and they will not be in this accident investigation.
Well, it still seems that profits are placed over the safety of the miners in this country. And, Tony, we unfortunately have run our course, but we'll continue in the weeks to come to look at these very important, critical issues. And I just want to end by a friend of yours, Tony, wrote a song over the weekend about this, and we're going to play it. Just give us a 20-second preview of the song.
Well, it's called Mont Cole, West Virginia, which, of course, is where the Massey disaster occurred. And it was written and performed by Alan Cathead Johnston, who sings a lot of songs about coal mining in that area of the country.
Well, Tony Uppegard, former General Counsel, Kentucky Department of Mine Safety in West Addington with the Mine Safety Project of the Appalachia Citizens Law Center, thank you for joining us, and we are going to go out with that song and continue to keep an eye on this most critical issue for workers.
On the fifth day of April, 2010, death came looking for 29 men and took away their spirits like a feather in the wind in Mont Cole, West Virginia. Didn't give a warning, didn't give a sign. They didn't see it coming. They were took down from behind by that methane devil way down in the mine in Mont Cole, West Virginia. And that mighty blast that rocked the earth and shook the willow bell came rolling up from underground like a hurricane from hell. And the angels up in heaven mourned the 29 that fell in Mont Cole, West Virginia.
And now, at a speech at the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO convention, Mine Workers President Roberts says that Massey Energy Company's continual inaction on safety violations at the Upper Big Branch mine, where 29 West Virginia coal miners died, should send Massey CEO Blankenship to jail. Thanks to the Rick Smith Show in Pennsylvania for the recorded sound.
Need good laws. We need those laws to be obeyed. We need those laws to be enforced. And those who fail to obey those laws should be punished. Don Blankenship, he's a lawbreaker. You know that. He breaks the health and safety laws of this country. You cannot deny that. He cannot deny that. He breaks every environmental law in this country. He has the worst environmental record in the coal fields. He ignores labor law. We have had 3 organizing attempts at this mine. He made this not a choice between whether you're in the union or not. He made it a choice between if you got a job or not. If there's any justice in America, the U.S. Marshals should go to where he lives, get him, handcuff him, put him in chains, take him to jail, set his fine at $40 million. There are things we can do here. The comptroller of New York City says that Massey and that board should be removed. They have $14 million of investment in Massey. I call on you today. If your union has pension money, general fund money, or any other money tied to this company, let's use the power of this movement to remove Don Blankenship and that entire board. Let's make them the poster child of what's wrong in America. We have gathered here today political clout. We should use that political clout in a number of ways. Why should a CEO be insulated from this? We have seen this at Aracoma in 2006. Criminal charges were brought, but not against the CEO. This CEO knows everything going on at every one of these mines. He calls every 2 hours. How much coal you running? I would have liked to have seen him call every 2 hours and say, how safe's the mine? I think we should use our clout to say it's time for a criminal investigation of the top person in this company, not some mine foreman. Congress is going to have hearings. We need not just the coal field senators, not just the Coalfield House members. We need every senator across this country to weigh in on this. Because if it can happen to coal miners, it can happen to steel workers, it can happen to auto workers, it can happen to IBEW members, it can happen to CWA members. We need to stop this madness right here, right now. Every worker in every occupation, whether a public employee or in manufacturing or in coal mining or construction, they have a right to say, listen to me, Mr. Boss. You're not putting me in this dangerous situation. I'm withdrawing myself, and this country should stand up for those workers. But let me tell you, there's one way that we know. As union members, we know that if you belong to a union, you'll tell that boss, I'm not going into that dangerous position. I'm calling the feds on you, and I'm going to see that you get fined if you don't fix this problem. It's time for Congress to pass the Employee Free Choice Act and give every worker in the United States this kind of protection. When we go out of here and you tell workers, if you want higher pay, join a union. If you want better health care, join a union. If you want to do away with poverty, join a union. If you want more time off, join a union. If you want a safer workplace, join a union. If you want greater pensions, join a union. If you want more democracy in your workplace, join a union. If you want to expand the middle class, join a union. If you want a better economy, join a union. If you want a voice at work, join a union. If you want a better America, join a union. The problem we have is we got too many wishy-washy friends. Preacher getting close to home, ain't he? Slide down that pew. You know, there's an old labor song. Which side are you on? If you know the rest of those words, they say there are no neutrals here. When it comes to the Employee Free Choice Act, got a lot of neutrals. I'm tired of the neutrals. How about you? Now, way before that song was written, Jesus said what? If you are not for me, what? You are against me. Now, it's time to look these politicians in the eye and say, pass the Employee Free Choice Act. Make America better. Make America stronger. Make America safer. It's time for us to get up, get on our feet, get out this door and hit the street. It's time to start marching. When the people start marching, the politicians start listening. Gandhi marched. Jesus marched. John L. Lewis marched. Dr. King marched. Moses marched. Moses didn't send Pharaoh no fax or email. We gotta be about the business of standing up together, fighting together, winning together.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.